Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest today, Richard Green. Thank you for reading those lovely poems before the break, Richard, and I know we're going to hear a few more later. It was a very serious poem you read just before the break, but you've said that your work contains a great many jokes, even though the overall tone may be sad. Can you give us an example? Like, how do these things go together?
I embarrass my children and bore them endlessly because I talk in baseball analogies, and you're going to have to forgive me. But in baseball, you can throw the pitch 100 miles an hour to the same spot every time, and only for the first few batters will this be impressive, because sooner or later someone will simply realize that they just have to lower the head of the bat and be there when the ball arrives. So I like to change things up, and that if the reader can't be absolutely certain what my next move is going to be, then more things are possible. So that is, and apart from that, I just like the jokes. welcome to Vegas. The jokes are, I think, in a way, a technical skill that there's not enough of in Canadian poetry. There's lots in Canadian prose, but two people put me onto this, two old guys, and they'll both be in a poem I'll read in a minute. It was Sheldon Zitner, who was an old gag writer, and he, oddly enough, became a Shakespearean scholar before settling back into writing poetry in his old age and was extremely good. And Kildare Dobbs, who used to write for the Toronto Star, which is where most people will see him, but he's also a very considerable poet and a really brilliant essay writer. And he was just one of the funniest darn people. They'll both show up in a poem I'll read. But they really felt that there was a monotone in a lot of contemporary poetry that needs to be complicated. You know, don't leave it like that. That, yes, there is such a thing as a pure voice, which really works in many, many poems, that you just get on your subject and you stick with it and you keep your tone and there's a music to it. But from time to time, there's an advantage in a sudden shift, and the jokes provide the sudden shift. And also, I think it adds something to your account of what it is to be in your skin, because you know, you're not necessarily sitting there with your wrist on your forehead gazing at the sunrise all the time, you know? And also, one other thing about that is that you often run into people who say funny things to you, and that's part of life. And you can report on that, which I love doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have an example of one?
Oh, sure. Okay, well, this will be the poem. It's in memory of one of them, Sheldon Zitner. Alas, they're both gone now. He died in 2005. So this is set initially as he was in hospital in Toronto. But then I had to go away, and I wasn't in town when he died. So it's called Heroic Measures. My fabled New Yorker, you saw me off with advice on marriage. Keep it flying. And with mischief, turned to an older friend. I go to prepare a place for you. That was after surgery in the step-down unit. Your small body nested among the wires, a screen to your left counting heartbeats, and on your forehead a cloth to cool you. None of this was really survivable. But I suppose that you are not killable, and that you and death would keep waiting for the blink. I bought a bottle of wine while you were dying. It was somewhere on the Avenue of the Americas. And from my change, 5 folded ones fell out of my pocket into the wind. And in the dark, 5 figures, one on a bicycle, chased them down and laid them in my hand. So much, I thought, for the myth of the nasty New Yorker. But what is sentiment in Manhattan? Far from your bed and bones, I heard you, still yourself, touching this milk of kindness with your tongue. Repeat the experiment. This time, use 20s.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah. Anyway, gags.
Yeah, it does work. Now, you've been writing for a long time, and your collection, Republic of Solitude, contains some poems that come from, well, I guess it's 30 years ago, when you were only 23.
Yeah, that's painful.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
How has your work changed over the years?
When I was young, I tended to write best at that time with the equipment that I had, poems that were rather intense descriptions of a moment. Now I have in my poetry a sense of time, but the value of the travel poetry is that I can stop for a while, so that I kind of have it both ways. However, I've been thinking lately that there was something in my early poetry that I would like to find again, that there was a terrific intensity. And someone noticed this in a really embarrassing way at a nice moment. When the universe was good enough to bestow the GG on me, Globe and Mail ran a review, a nice review, and gave as an example of my best work the earliest poem in the book, which, not unfortunately, I'm glad that I've ever written it, but it happened to be a poem that I wrote in, about 1985, in a volume that came out in 2009. There's a little poem called Custom, and I had revised it 50 times. It was a desperate failure the first time I wrote it. I showed it to a great old poet named Peter Levy, who was very good to me, and he just told me, this line, good. The rest of it, no. And so I went and labored over it. But there was a tone there, and I'm thinking about that. I don't know where I'll go with it.
An interesting perspective. Because I had almost expected you to talk about the content of your poems, you know, the subject matter changing over the years. And
I'm happier.
Yeah.
That's a difference. I'm a happier person. And so the poems are a bit happier. Not that I was desolate. I wasn't, you know, in a very bad space. But poems, you write, Mary Dalton is a well-known Canadian poet, and she said to me once, you write the poems you need. And so poems tend to be about need. And you get a rather interesting but distorted picture of a person from the book of poems, because each poem is written at a point of need. So you get a picture of the person as being constantly in agony. And actually, no. Not at all. That people who know me well would actually regard me as, airhead's the wrong word, but goofy. Really goofy. And I hear the voice in the back saying, yeah, let's stick with airhead, actually. And so that the poems tend to concentrate intense questioning.
Well, perhaps you'll read a little bit more for us now?
Sure. I'd like to read poem, one of the sections from the new long poem, Dante's House. In that poem, I'm in the ancient city of Siena in Tuscany, and I've been roped into doing teaching a course there for students because the actually qualified professor withdrew on short notice, and, well, I was what they had. And so I had no Italian, had no course prepared, I just sort of parachuted in, hadn't been in Italy for 30 years, and then only briefly. So I just kept a lot of notes, and one of the people who so fascinated me was an old restaurant guy, a little poor restaurant, and his name was Umberto. And the town itself is riven by divisions, because there are all these sections called contrade, which back horses in the famous bareback race, the Palio. And these sections of the town are always fighting and so on, either for or against someone. So let's have a kind of a crowd scene here. Umberto stands watchful beside my table, annoyed at something bad for the business. Two contrade making ordinary trouble, but because it is on his corner, the mess matters. His own Tartuca's parade, that's the name of his contrade, meets Chiocciola, or at least I guess it is turtle and snail. The marchers trade melodies of insult on San Pietro and intersperse a fabulous tirade of abuse in prose. I know it's retrograde and bad morals for me to enjoy the beginnings of a fight. Some maestro from Tartuca tells them this will destroy the peace of their streets. The scuffle goes on, and a few unbothered cops deploy. The corner blocks my view. A yearning grows to step forward and look, but sadly, I know I'd better stay out of the front rows. Twirling spaghetti on my fork, I try to look uninterested. Flags, percussion, and punches all contribute now to my sense of Siena. Of course, no concussion, no blood. Nini, my friend, appears at that moment, eyes alight. They're having a discussion. He slips into the crowd, but the event is winding down. As one parade turns right, passes before my table, fury spent, the other is still longing for a fight and stands its ground. Women, in middle age, stabbing the air with fingers, all their bright voices tossing music like a stone. Rage becomes thirst, and Umberto is pouring wine and beer for men who will write the page of how this is retold. Drink restoring humor, boasts of uppercuts giving way to droll respect for the foe. their warring pals in that other tribe. But what they say is mysterious to me. Gestures, phrases, glasses emptied, cigarettes thrown away. And what I gather is mostly guesses about a life that is not mine. I sit as the last of the fierce crowd disperses and watch the street grow quiet and starlit. Worn out, Umberto joins me in a glass. If he didn't own this place, I guess he'd quit and be easy, though he could hardly pass his days on calcio, a word for football, game shows, or a soap. Next thing, his wife would have him off to mass, and that would surely be the end. He'll cope, cook a little, carve the pecorini, and let continuance do the work of hope.
Oh, what a wonderful picture you painted there. Thank you, Richard.
Thanks. Real pleasure.
And thanks for joining us today as part of our series to celebrate Poetry Month.
Delighted. It's really good of you to have me on. Yeah.
Well, it was lovely to have you. Where can readers buy your books?
I believe there's some copies at the Artisan Market. There may be some at the...
The Avid Reader?
There have been. I don't know what their stock is. And, of course, they're always out there on Chapters, so I gather it's wicked of me to propose anyone use Chapters or Amazon. However, they so can be had that way.
That is the way of the world these days. And thank you, too, to our listeners for tuning in today to Word on the Hills. If you are interested in finding out more about our arts group, Spirit of the Hills, you can go to our website at www.spiritofthehills.org. If you would like to send us comments or queries or suggestions of who we might interview in future programs, please email us at wordonthehills897@gmail.com. So thanks again for tuning in. We hope you'll join us next week for another program.